The name of the song is Blue Lights. I hope you feel this song and really understand what I'm trying to say. Well, the hook says, because the video is flashing at me every day, I guess everybody's just a criminal celebrity. I'm so tired of those blue lights. My name is AV, that's short for audio video. I spell audio video with two D's, so that's AUDDIOVIDDEO. And I'm a producer, I'm a writer, I'm an artist all around. I like to write songs that have meanings behind it. It's like paparazzi working for the
police and the tabloids only for the streets. I'm tired of the lights because it's starting to feel like I'm guilty until proven innocent. You know, because I live in this particular neighborhood that I deserve to be watched, or I'm suspicious. Well, watch them lights right there. Watch that cop play the pipe right there. They're not hidden cameras. They're there to pretty much give us a warning. And it's not just warning us not to do crimes. It's also warning other people, outsiders or tourists or people from other counties, that this is a bad area. I ain't trying to get comfortable, cause they better find out everything you wanna know. And the pattern's just like dominoes. Get them used to this, get them used to that, and we all gon' get them like, you know. And the pattern's just like dominoes. Get them used to this, get them used to that, and we all gon' get them like an open track. I feel as though it's actually working. It is like dominoes. We all getting used to blue lights being in our neighborhood. You know, because it's almost as if it's invisible now, because they so used to it being there. It's almost as if it's decoration to them. That's why I say it's like dominoes. We get them used to this, we get them used to that. So what's next? You know, surveillance in your house, surveillance in your car, surveillance at work, surveillance where else? I live on Pennsylvania North, and when I walk outside my door, I see two blue lights. I'm automatically on camera. That means if I open my curtain, whatever I'm doing inside my house is now viewed for Baltimore Police Department. I never asked to be in a reality show. I'm not getting ending credits. I just know I'm being watched, and they expect me to do something wrong because I live in that area. And your home probably on watch now. Spotlight shining the whole block down. You see the SWAT car, see the big van. I don't see that near no rich man. Now, when I say that, I'm saying it because that area is supposedly a hot zone or a criminal infested area. That's giving them reason to surround us with SWAT cars and K-9 units and paddy wagons. But I see that everywhere, every 5 seconds around my way. But when I go visit my uncle or my aunt out in Reisterstown or Orange Mills, or if I go to Gaithersburg or anywhere, you know, if I go to any areas where it's not a hot zone or anything like that, I haven't seen a paddy wagon. You know, the poverty, I wouldn't even say it's a black or white neighborhood type of thing. I would say rich people, you know, and poor. I feel as though if they really concerned about the criminal activity in Baltimore, should be blue lights on every single corner, not specific designated areas, because crimes happen everywhere.
Thanks for downloading this week's episode of The Lines Between Us, a weekly series on 88.1 WYPR about inequality in the Baltimore region. I'm Lawrence Lanahan, senior producer for Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. Much more at our website, including data maps, opportunities for listeners to join the discussion, and more stories like the one you're about to hear. That's linesbetweenus.org. Now, back to the podcast.
It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast, wishing great happiness to everyone preparing to celebrate Easter on Sunday. Welcome back to our series on inequality, The Lines Between Us. The series began by looking at how housing policy and lending practices helped create this region's fractured landscape of race and class. Then we heard about the role of race, class, and gender in employment and other economic opportunities. Now our series turns to those who find themselves isolated from those opportunities. We'll spend the next few weeks examining the lines between us that are affected by the state of law enforcement and criminal justice in our region. We'll start with surveillance. Some see Baltimore's iconic blue light police cameras as a marker, lighting up the lines around the city's high-crime neighborhoods. For residents living among the blue lights, the cameras can be seen either as a welcome crime deterrent or an insult to their privacy and honesty. You just heard the story behind The Blue Lights, the name of a song by the hip-hop producer Audio Video about life under the cameras. The city says reported crime drops by about 25% in areas where cameras are installed. At our website, linesbetweenus.org, we have the Urban Institute's cost-benefit analysis of crime cameras in Baltimore and two other cities. They found it's a net positive here. In a few minutes, we'll talk to Lieutenant Sam Hood, director of the Baltimore Police City Watch program, and to City Councilman Brandon Scott, who wants to bring more cameras to his district in Northeast Baltimore. First, we touch base with David Rocha, an attorney with Maryland's chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. Maryland Morning senior producer Lawrence Lanahan asked him how he feels police surveillance relates to inequality in our region.
I think the Baltimore's blue light cameras are one of many manifestations of the way policing in Baltimore differs significantly in different communities. In wealthier, whiter parts of Baltimore, the policing happens one way, and in poorer African American parts of Baltimore, policing happens in very different ways, and the cameras are one manifestation of that.
How do the cameras make policing different in one place rather than another?
Well, I mean, the most important way is that you don't see the cameras in wealthier, whiter parts of Baltimore, and you do see them in poorer African American parts of Baltimore. And what that means is that certain parts of our community are subject to the constant watchful eye and the psychological toll that imposes, and others aren't. And I want to be clear about something, which is that obviously all people in Baltimore deserve to live in safe communities. And people in the neighborhoods where these cameras exist clearly want safe communities and deserve safe communities.
You know, the series is about inequality. I mean, do you feel like policing different communities differently adds up to a form of inequality?
Well, I think it's certainly true that policing different communities differently is a significant form of inequality in this society. I think it's also true that in certain parts of Baltimore, you are much more likely to be not only stopped and frisked, but arrested for minor petty offenses that simply wouldn't even attract police attention in other communities. We see it in other ways as well, in the police in schools, the criminalization of youth. And it's one important way in which our society simply treats certain parts of our community as a community to be policed rather than a community to be served.
A lot of the cameras are downtown.
Yeah, downtown is a different situation in the sense that downtown, for the most part, still is not a residential area.
And they have started putting them in Midtown, too. So they're sort of branching out from the higher crime communities. I mean, does that make a difference for you, at least in terms of the inequality of it?
Well, I mean, there's another thing to be said about the cameras, which is, and it's another sort of paradox and way in which cameras are complicated. The harm of cameras becomes greater as they become more widespread, and the intrusion into privacy becomes greater as they become more widespread because it simply becomes more and more difficult, if not impossible, to avoid them. But the fact that they're not that widespread now, while it alleviates those costs, it means that the costs are not evenly shared, and the burdens are not evenly shared.
But maybe they're becoming more evenly shared? I mean, if they're going out to Midtown and Northeast?
Right. I mean, that's my point, that as we expand the camera networks, the burden of the cameras and psychological costs that they impose will be more widely shared. And I think that may or may not end up being an impediment to their more widespread deployment. I think we're also, as a society, becoming more and more accustomed to and thus tolerant of pervasive surveillance. And I think that will come back to haunt us, and I think that's a negative development.
That was senior producer Lawrence Lanahan talking to ACLU Maryland attorney David Rocha. On WIPR, this is The Lines Between Us on Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Joining us now to talk about the City Watch Crime Camera Program is the director of that program, Lieutenant Sam Hood. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And also with us is Brandon Scott, Baltimore City Councilman for District 2 in Northeast Baltimore. He'd like to see more of these cameras in his district. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, ma'am.
Lieutenant Hood, tell us how law enforcement uses these cameras.
The City Watch program provides constant preventive and proactive video-only surveillance in public spaces. We are to deter and prevent crime. That's the mission for City Watch.
So it's more deterrence and prevention than it is in investigation and prosecution?
Correct.
How many cameras are there?
622.
And what do these cameras mean for officers on the street?
It enables a police officer to provide 24-hour protection in our neighborhoods, in our downtown tourism, in our business area, in a way a single officer could not, because he can't look in several different directions at the same time. That's why we're observing and monitoring, trying to prevent violent acts or any criminal activity. So we're trying to be that one additional step for aiding that officer to prevent crime in that area.
Councilman Scott, your district is in the east, northeast?
Northeast, yes, ma'am.
Part of the city. What are your constituents telling you about the cameras?
My constituents actually want more of them. In particular, they want more of them along the Bel Air Road corridor, which is in my portion of the Bel Air Road corridor in the district. My district is not an area that's known for high crime, but the most important thing to my constituents right now is the revitalization of that corridor. Right now, we have a lot of empty car lots, and the cameras to them is a sign to business owners or people we're trying to attract to come that the city takes value in this, just like they take value in downtown and other areas where they have a lot of the cameras. Because we don't have a lot of crime, a lot of violence, we do have a lot of vacant places that look like you could have that something. I'm trying to attract a restaurateur to come to Bel Air Road. What the constituents are saying is that they are tired of downtown getting all the resources. They want to see those resources spread throughout the neighborhoods. They don't want them in their neighborhood streets, but the Bel Air Road corridor is where we want more of them.
So you're hearing something different about residential areas than business areas?
Oh, yeah. They're clear. They want it particularly along the main roads. But for us in my district, that's particularly when we do have crime, it happens on the main corridor because it is a business corridor.
Lieutenant Hood, who decides which cameras go where?
Well, it's actually, there's a committee that we put together that what we decide is, one, we take all the crime data that we've had in the past, and then it goes to the police commissioner, and then he also takes input from the community associations, from the district commanders, and then they present that to city council. And then city council determines, and they try to identify the prioritization of who gets which cameras.
So the city council has a role in this?
Well, they ask our opinion. I don't necessarily would say that they do whatever we say. Of course, they don't have to, but they do. The good thing about it is that a few years back, as you guys saw, they heard from some people, not in my portion of Northeast, but in Councilwoman Clark's and Councilman Branch's portion of Northeast Baltimore, about how they wanted crime cameras. And to the credit of the police department and the administration, they were able to add cameras into that area. This is something that the community asked for.
And Lieutenant Hood, which cameras get the flashing blue lights and the big City Watch insignia, and which ones don't?
Well, that's actually, it's by generation. The first generation cameras are the big pods that we all know that has the sticker on the side. It says City Watch and the flashing blue light.
POD stands for?
Portable Overt Digital Surveillance System. Okay. There's only 8 of those left. That was actually first generation. We found that they were cost prohibitive, they were very expensive, and they weren't monitored live. So they weren't really, as you stated a moment ago, very preventive. So the second generation had a small blue light on it with, and it looks like a little teardrop. We started putting the small blue light, but most of the community said, we really don't want the blue light. So we've actually gone to the third generation, and most of the cameras we've put up along Bel Air and Hartford Road, some have a blue light, some don't. And that's only because they are main corridors. This is part of the funding comes from Homeland Security, and these are evacuation routes, so they could clearly identify those routes.
So you're not phasing out the blue lights entirely, but there are proportionally less of them as you build up cameras.
We respect the community's opinion if they want a blue light or not.
On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast, talking to Lieutenant Sam Hood, director of Baltimore City Watch Crime Camera Program, and District 2 City Councilman Brandon Scott. Councilman Scott, what's your reaction to that song we heard, the audio video?
Well, I know exactly how the young man feels, and I always say I will never say that someone else's life and what they experience is wrong. Of course, as everybody knows, I grew up in Park Heights and actually lived there when the first blue light cameras came. But as I've grown, I've taken a different look. You know, we always hear that they're only in bad neighborhoods, but growing up in Park Heights, I know that they're in Southern Park Heights, and then there's a camera on every corner in Northern Park Heights, which we all know is one of our most affluent communities in the city. So I think that we as a city have to do a better job of everybody coming together and understanding what the purpose of these cameras actually are, and that they aren't to attack this young man, who had a nice song, by the way,
Blue Lights.
To attack this young man or people like him, but they're for the safety of everybody. That's what they're there for. And we have gotten away from just having them in quote-unquote bad neighborhoods, because we do have them in Upper Park Heights. We do have them in downtown, which is one of our fastest-growing residential neighborhoods. We are starting to get them in Northeast Baltimore. We do have them in Midtown, which getting away from them, just putting them in areas that are quote-unquote bad or violent, but putting them in areas where people want them as a force multiplier for the cops in their neighborhood. Because if you're someone like me who has to go to community meetings in both sides, when you go to the affluent parts of the city, some folks there will say that the people in the violent areas get all the resources, and vice versa is what's said. So I think outside of all of this and outside of the politics, the city, we all need to come together as a whole and understand and build bridges between communities so we can understand what our neighbors are experiencing, but also understand that their problems are our problems and vice versa, because those things that he says are very real. But some people in some other neighborhoods have things that happen to them that are very real as well. And I know this to be true. Sometimes when you are someone that looks like me and as young as I am, and you're in a neighborhood that someone might think you're not supposed to be in, they might call the cops on you, and vice versa. So we have a lot of community building to do.
Lieutenant Hood, you heard David Broca from the ACLU discuss some of the privacy issues around these cameras. I understand the police department developed something called the, quote, General Order on Electronic Surveillance Procedures, close quote. What is in there to reassure people with privacy concerns?
In that general order, basically, it states right up front, we know it's a sacred trust between the public and the police department. And we also understand, and we make it very clear to everyone, we post signs that they're under surveillance at this location where there are cameras. And then we also have everybody who's monitoring the cameras. It's only in public spaces. If you're watching something that's not in a public space and you violate someone's trust, you will be terminated.
For example, if a camera is pointed at a building that includes apartments, includes offices, how do you not monitor that if you're monitoring the output of that camera?
Well, the way the camera, you're looking at the public space. You shouldn't be looking in the window. And if it's directed there, and that's what's the one thing it's nice about, it's a safeguard for the video. You can see that video. So that we have that video. If there's a complaint or supervisors watching those monitors, they watch the monitor and we can see what they're looking at. So it's not like they can hide what actions they're doing.
But I'm just saying, it doesn't the camera actually catch activity that is not public?
In public spaces. I mean, if they'd have to zoom in on through a window or something else that's not in a public space, then we can see that. And we can see that right away because there's supervisors on each shift.
Supervisors on each shift. So somebody is monitoring?
The monitors.
Somebody's monitoring the monitors. Some of the larger questions. We've heard criticism that areas with more cameras are policed more heavily and aggressively, and that police community relations can suffer. Is that a fair criticism?
I would say I am directed by the mayor and the police commissioner on where we need to emphasize, and it's usually due to where the crime has spiked. And every week, the police commissioner identifies where activity enforcement needs to be, and that's how we direct which ones are actively monitored. Because it's like knowing where the criminal activity, because we're in the prevention and proactively enforcement. So we watch areas where they're having a spike in violence from the recent GIS crime data and knowing where that has occurred. And that's updated each week, and then we reevaluate which areas we watch. So one area, if they're getting more monitoring, it might be only because there's more cameras in that area or because there's criminal activity in that area that's increased more than another area. But we do not leave any of the camera projects abandoned. We watch all the camera projects, and we have someone constantly watching each one of them because we're just not, it's not just the police department. This is a partnership between public and private partners. We're with housing. We have Midtown Community Association. All of our partners are also want these areas watched, and some of them are watching their own cameras inside City Watch. And we have a couple state facilities and also that monitor their cameras through City Watch.
You've heard, both of you have heard people who feel that there is an impact on their community when there's a camera, especially a camera with a blue light. How do you take that into account in your strategy?
Well, obviously, originally some have complained if they don't have the blue light, where we did say we removed the pods, the first generation, and they didn't feel as secure without the blue light. And that's just because they felt that they wanted that presence. They wanted everybody to know that they were being monitored in that area. Because when we did, remember, some of the new cameras don't have a light. So we had citizens actually call us and complain that they want one that has a light. And sometimes the light doesn't have to do anything with the camera. And if the light goes out, they think the camera's not working. And we get those complaints also.
I think, Sheila, it's different. Everything in Baltimore is different from neighborhood to neighborhood. Whereas I have some of my elderly citizens that live actually in Bella Edison, which is mainly Councilman Branch's district, who begged and pleaded to have those cameras. And it's generational. That we want the camera. I don't feel safe when I'm on the bus stop in the morning because, we know, when I'm going to work, can we get a camera? Can you get a camera? Then some of my younger constituents who I may have happened to went to school with growing up, they say, when they come back home from college, they're like, why are the cameras here? And I'm like, well, your neighbors asked for them. So a lot of it is generational. And it's also, we have to, again, I think that the mindset of the city and working on our neighborhoods and fixing our community and family structure, to me, is the most important issue in the city today. Because with so many generational breakdowns and so much community breakdown, I think that leads to people not understanding one another, but it also leads to not everybody not working together on the issue.
Thank you both.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Lieutenant Sam Hood is director of the Baltimore Police Department's City Watch Crime Camera Program, and Brandon Scott is city councilman for District 2 in Northeast Baltimore. We have a map of the city's crime cameras at our website, linesbetweenus.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Later on The Lines Between Us, Tom Hall talks to two local artists who have created works of commentary on police surveillance. Stay with us here on 88.1.
I'm assistant producer Jamila Kay. You're listening to Maryland Mornings, The Lines Between Us series on WYPR 88.1 in Baltimore. Visit our website, linesbetweenus.org, to hear more stories, to see maps that reveal the lines in your neighborhood, and to participate in the discussion. Thanks for downloading this week's show. Now back to the podcast.
Back on 88.1, I'm Tom Hall, and it's The Lines Between Us. We're going to continue our conversation about surveillance and inequality, this time from the perspective of two artists who have used police surveillance cameras to animate their work. At the top of the hour, you heard a song called Blue Lights about Baltimore City's cameras. That song is by Audio Video. That's with two D's in each name. We thought we'd have him back along with Michael Farley. He's a visual artist from Baltimore whose work has also responded to the City Watch cameras. During the 2010 Artscape Festival, he had a sculpture in the median of Mount Royal Avenue that proved to be very popular. On the outside, it looks just like a police camera with the black box, the white print, and of course, the blue light. But on the inside, it says Peep Show, and there's a slit where you can look out on the crowd from the same perspective of a police camera. And of course, no one can see you watching them. So we've got a photograph of that piece on our website. And now AV and Michael Farley join me in the studio. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for coming in. So let's, AV, I really like this tune of yours, Blue Lights. It's got a great beat. Let's hear a little bit of that song. Here's Blue Lights. So you better go home, get your kids on me. Get them blue lights, twinkle, recording. Everything important, sorting. Every little move that you make, like live, AV, at the corner of Pennsylvania and North Avenue. How many cameras are over in there?
Well, when you walk out on the corner alone, you might see about a strip of 2 to 3 lights, you know, that might stretch down 2 blocks to your left and the same to your right.
Because the trend is for more cameras, you know. I mean, we started in 2005. There were, like, fewer than 200. By last year, it was a couple mayors later from when they started, there were 583, and there's even a trend now to use cameras that are installed at businesses, that the police can now have access to that. But you don't like them. It's a drag to have them near where you live. How come?
I really think it labels the area as a bad area, and that includes everyone that is being viewed by this camera. You know, you're pretty much looked at as being somebody that's guilty of something, and we just hope you do something, you know, in front of this camera, you know, when I'm in front of that camera. So it's almost like paparazzi is looking at you when you walk out the door, you know, of your own home, you know. But when you step out the door to get your paper, you're being watched by a blue light. If police are walking around your neighborhood because somebody else did something and they saw something on a blue light, you know, that's their probable cause to search you, and you just came out your house to walk up the street for something. So it's kind of like the treatment that you get for being in that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do probably base it, well, I'm sure they base it on exactly that, that, you know, if there is crime in a particular place, they put up the surveillance cameras to try to catch folks doing stuff that's breaking the law.
Yeah, exactly. But this is on public property. This isn't a bank that's on private property or anything like that. You know, mm-hmm. This isn't property that's owned by somebody that's paying a lot of money for this security that he's budgeting to pay somebody's payroll for. This isn't ADT. This mm-hmm. is Baltimore Police Department looking at you to put cuffs on you.
Mm-hmm. So, AV, like on Labor Day weekend, there was a young woman named Laurel Ashlyn Amos. She was killed by a stray bullet. Mm-hmm. You know, her family just a couple weeks ago was in the sun, you know, obviously continuing to grieve her loss. So there's one example of many in which if there is some evidence, if there's someone who was around, if there's someone who happened to see where that bullet emanated from, you know, it may help find the person who did this, even if the person didn't intend to do it, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, is there any upside to having these cameras as one of the tools that police and prosecutors can use?
Well, I think it can help solve crimes, and I think it can, you know, make people think twice about doing things in certain areas, you know. But at the same time, you know, every cure has side effects to it. And getting us used to this one cure, we may be addicted to it, or we might get used to it. And the next step might be, you know, instead of the cameras being outside, but it's inside my car now. It's inside my house. It's inside my room. And we're getting used to it, and our kids are getting used to it. So by the time they become adults, when the idea for it to come into their rooms, when that's presented, people will vote for it because they're used to being watched already. Mm-hmm. Privacy is no longer a big thing in America.
You know, our series is called The Lines Between Us, and I'm interested. You and I are both musicians. We live 5 blocks from each other because I live up on Utah and Druid Park Lake Drive.
Oh, okay.
Right? And there's lights all through the park, right? You're black, I'm white. Mm-hmm. And the lights don't bother me at all. It's like, I'm cool with the lights because if they help deter crime or if they help prosecute people who are making crimes, I'm down with that. Is this a line? Does this have a lot to do with the relationship that the black community has with the police and how that differs from the relationship that the white community has with the police in particular?
Well, it depends on how often you have been around this kind of behavior. You know, whether you're black or white, you know, or whether you're in the suburbs or not, is going to determine how much you've experienced, you know, trouble with the police and how they behave with you or why they really want these blue lights up or if these blue lights are really even working, you know. So it's like I see a lot of bad things go on in front of the camera and nothing goes on. Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of average Joe people just walking by, just, you know, living their life, you know, innocent people, you know, who would like to deserve the privacy of just walking by that street or just driving by without being looked in the car. You know, if I'm staring into your car at a stoplight, but just the fact that I'm minding your business and looking into your car could bother you is very disrespectful. And to have these cameras in my neighborhood, not in the suburbs or any other place, it's pretty much labeling me as a person that might misbehave before I even misbehave.
Mm-hmm. Michael Farley, if you take a city like London, for example, London has, it's the most highly surveilled city on the planet. They've got more cameras than any other place as far as I know. And the cameras are kind of hidden. You don't really notice them when you're walking around the streets of London. Is the fact that they are so ostentatious, if you will, in Baltimore, they are blue, they flash, they're, you know, everyone knows what they are, they have a police insignia on them. Would it be different, in your view, were they more subtle? Were they sort of off in the background and you weren't aware of them all the time?
I appreciate their honesty for being so visible. I think it would bother me more were they less conspicuous. But I mean, yeah, I'd like to go on the record as saying I'm white and they bother me. I think it's interesting that they don't bother a lot of people is actually something that I've become more interested in. It's like how our expectation of privacy has been changing. And I just saw the Hassan Elahi show at Maryland Art Place, Thousand Little Brothers, where
He's a guy who documents everything he does because he was on a do not fly list as a terrorist.
He self-surveils.
Just because of his name. I mean, he's an Arab guy.
Yeah, he self-surveils and just kind of is like, I have nothing to hide. I'm going to put it all out here. And what struck me while seeing that show is like he's been doing this for about 10 years. And in that amount of time, how much the average person has begun like self-surveilling so much more than someone who's doing it as a conceptual art piece has been. So with social media and things like that, you know, people are constantly checking in where they are and photographing themselves where they are and things like that.
It's Michael Farley. He's an artist from Baltimore. He's here in the studio with AV, a hip-hop artist and producer who has produced the tune Blue Lights, which we will post in full on our website. It's The Lines Between Us. I'm Tom Hall. It's Marilyn Morning with Sheila Cass. And AV, at the end of your video, I'm struck by the scene that you have because there's a bunch of kids, black kids, and they all got phones, and they're in negative image, and they are photographing the blue light camera. Yeah. And it's an interesting irony that the police, in many cases, are not at all thrilled when citizens are taping them.
Exactly.
You know, so that's quite a difference in perspective in terms of the worth of videotape.
Right. I mean, it's pretty much giving you a lesson, yeah. Pretty much giving you a taste of your own medicine because they hate it when we world star or YouTube an officer doing something crazy, you know. And we don't like it when they're just putting us on blast, you know, have us on a camera. We don't know who's looking at us and what purpose. It's more like a peep show, you know.
Because there's a line in your rap, and I'll tell you, it bothers me, man. It's about snitching, you know. It's about you don't want people snitching, you don't want the cameras knowing, you don't want other people, if they know, talking about it to authorities. That's, you know, that's
read that line to me.
Watch them lights right in there. Watch that cop plant a pipe right there, talking about the police. Mm-hmm. Watch that fiend when he snitch your name. Watch that trooper when he's switching lanes, you know. So the snitching thing is a difficult ethical dilemma. You want to be true to your friends. You want to be true to the people who live near you, but man, if they've broken the law, the prosecutors are telling you we need people to step forward.
Yeah. But pretty much in that line right there, that's for a general, well, that whole song is more of a general outlook from everybody's perspective, because even in there, I'm saying, watch this, watch that, watch this. And I'm saying, these lights are watching your back too, you know? So it's just like, it's a lot of things that's going on. It's kind of like The Wire from how the drugs in the streets can affect the politicians at the top. You see what I'm saying? So I'm saying, watch this, watch that, watch this cop, because there is crooked cops out here too, you know? And even though the cops are doing something wrong, I'm not saying that we ain't doing something wrong too. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that we're innocent. But just because we're doing something wrong doesn't mean that they have to fight fire with fire and take our freedoms away in order to catch us doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They can still stay honorable in their jobs, and which is the reason why they have a badge and why we're supposed to show them so much respect. It's because you're supposed to be a man of a different type of caliber.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and respect is at the heart of this, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's like, even if we don't show you respect, that doesn't mean that you have to treat every other citizen that way, or this is the way we have to treat you guys now. Because
doesn't it though, man? If you don't show someone respect, why should that person show you respect?
No, because it's this. These
try
this
telling
is a country
that to a
of,
cop.
This is a country of individuals, and it doesn't matter if 1,000 people did something wrong to an officer. If I'm a brand new person walking around, you don't treat me how you treated the last 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you have a badge. I'm a citizen. I'm allowed to act up. You feel me? You're a man with a badge. I'm supposed to show you respect because you're supposed to be a man of the law.
It's a different standard.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm supposed to expect more from you than ourselves, mm-hmm. regardless of how wrong we are.
And it's an interesting irony, AB, because at the top of the show you talked about how it would be different if there were blue lights everywhere. Both in the suburbs, you know, the white areas, the black areas, the Hispanic areas, if they were everywhere, would that even the playing field for you and make you feel better about it?
Actually, I think it would still be worse. I think it would just be a pretty much a gateway to a lot of other freedoms being taken away if we were to allow it to go any further than where they are now. I think they should come down ultimately because I'm sure they can see us from other satellites, you know, government officials that keep that privacy and keep that at least a secret away from us, you know. But when we have cameras with these boxes and lights on them, and even if they were to hide them in bushes like they do in London, then that means you're not free. You're in a prison. You're being watched, you know. And as soon as you come out yourself, you're on a cell block. You're being watched by people. And there's guards walking around. They don't have cameras on them. We don't have cameras to watch them when they're talking to us. They don't stop to let us pull our cell phones out and aim it at them while they're talking to us.
Well, AV, I appreciate your coming in. Thanks for your perspective.
Thank you.
And Michael Farley, you too. Appreciate it, and good luck.
Thanks, Tom.
Music producer, audio, video, and the visual artist Michael Farley. You can see pictures of Michael's sculpture and see the video for AV's song at linesbetweenus.org. I'm Tom Hall on 88.1. It's been The Lines Between Us. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Lines Between Us, WYPR's year-long exploration of inequality in the Baltimore region. This is Maryland Morning senior producer Lawrence Lanahan. Now, join the conversation at facebook.com/thelinesbetweenus or tell us your story at linesbetweenus.org. The Lines Between Us is made possible by grants from Associated Black Charities, Cohen Opportunity Fund, Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, Baltimore Community Foundation, and Open Society Institute Baltimore, as well as support from members of the WYPR Board of Directors. I hope you'll join us again on Friday at 9 a.m. on 88.1 FM in the Baltimore region, and everywhere else, streaming live at WYPR.org. Have a great day.